Hello and welcome to a special edition of Soccer to the Max. As it has finally happened, the fifth time of asking, a Major League Soccer team has won the CONCACAF Champions League in its current format. I mean, they were the favorites. They were the expected team to win, but they still had to play the game. And with all of the other historic letdowns that were there and have happened, you still couldn't believe it until that whistle blew at the end. It's finally here, Eric. Seattle, champions of CONCACAF, Los Reyes de CONCACAF, going to that Club World Cup finally. It's not neither one of our teams, but still, it's a cool moment.
To me, it's actually incredibly fitting that it's Seattle, and especially the way that it happened. Not just what turned out to be a rather unexpected 3-0 win
Right.
tonight, but last week, skin of their teeth in the rain in Mexico City, 9th minute of stoppage time to get that penalty to level it 2-2. I mean, we had talked about it. It was like, hey, this is the moment. The Sounders were the team of destiny, and they finally fulfill that tonight.
Yeah, we will also be talking about what seems like another team of destiny in the UEFA Champions League. That we will also cover here since the final is set. So we're going to talk about both Champions Leagues, and there's some other little tidbits of news to discuss as well. Before we get to that, should note that our first Know Your Teams is out, and you can go watch it if you desire. We covered the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I apologize for saying that incorrectly. The entire time that we did that show, thankfully, our cool people in the comments were able to just, correct us and let us know. And I did say that we would offer that correction. So that being said, just so you know what we're doing, on Saturday we're going to cover our next team in the Know Your Teams, which is Ghana, and then we will kind of be going through a lot of these. So Saturdays will be the World Cup version of Know Your Teams, and then Wednesdays will be the CONCACAF W version of Know Your Teams as we keep going towards that tournament that's on Independence Day. July 4th is when that starts. So we're trying to get through all the teams and until we get to that. And of course, as we continue on closer to the World Cup, and then that's what we're talking about here today. And for Major League Soccer, what a big moment that is. And also, what a big moment for a lot of these players, I mean, that have made this move to Seattle and been here. Nicolas Lodeiro, what a cool thing for him to be the one that scores the goal that finally kind of puts it away, right? The 3-0. And after all he's done for Seattle, to what a moment that's your hero does it there.
Exactly. In front of a record crowd of nearly 70,000. And he's like, I don't care about the yellow card. It's sealed. I'm taking off my shirt. I'm
I mean,
celebrating with the fans. It's just,
that is a moment to take off your shirt right there.
yes,
You know you're gonna win.
absolutely.
Yeah. You know you're gonna win the championship at that point. Like you said, 68,000 strong, the highest attended CONCACAF Champions League game ever, and beating the Herediano and Club America semifinal from many years ago. Like going through that and just looking at Real Salt Lake failure, Toronto FC, Montreal failing as well. I mean, and 2-2, like we said, Seattle really had to struggle with penalties to get to that. It wasn't easy at all. It wasn't something that like you weren't we weren't expecting this. And honestly, from being able, I mean, you got to see a lot more of the game than I did. I'm having to watch it while also working at the same time. Not the easiest thing to do, but quite honestly, I mean, Stephen Fry made some two terrific saves. I got to point that out to keep them in the game. But Seattle really took it to Pumas, and they were the better side all throughout this.
They really were. And getting that goal fairly early on, that was the absolute dream, because even in Mexico City, Pumas, they had to go ahead and they were always more comfortable with the possession and everything for the lead. You saw when Pumas spent most of tonight having to chase the game, Seattle clamping down on the wings, just not even worrying so much about absorbing a lot of pressure, waiting for the counter. They just picked it and go. They set up great attacks. And yes, Stefan Fry, he really wasn't even needed that much until his clutch save where he was shuffling his feet and parrying the ball in the 65th minute. That's when you really knew, okay, Seattle has really got this. And then not long after scoring that second goal, you saw Pumas, which they had no answers. They weren't deflated, but they were just scrambling at that point.
Yeah, I mean, and I think credit also to Seattle to lose your one of your extremely key players in Joao Pedro to have him go down in the 30th minute. Within 30 minutes, you use your left back, Nuno, right? And then you lose Pedro. And it's like, that's a core of your team out right there. A youngster has to come in his spot. Kellen Rowe has to come in. To their credit, that entire team just brought it together. I mean, we saw Christian Roldan go back and make some key stops. Rusnak was everywhere. That dude was just absolutely bombing. Jordan Morris had some big moments as well. But obviously, Reed Diaz, he called it the biggest game of his life, the biggest game of his career, and the dude, designated player and all, with all the pressure, comes in. Yeah, you can call it a lucky deflection on that first goal to get by Talavera all you want. You know, and it is. But that's the game sometimes, right? Talavera's going one way, the deflection makes it to where it goes straight down the center. He can't get to it. There's your first goal. And, you know, it's not like Pumas didn't have some opportunities. Dinero missed one where he skied it over. And, Stefan Fry with that one where he's like going this way, comes back and just swats it with his hand up in the air like that. I mean, just like he literally kind of at the last minute just goes like that. And it's just like, wow, you know, what a huge moment for him. And not only that, I mean, it helps him win not only goalkeeper of the tournament, but he wins the MVP as well, which is what a fantastic thing for him. Dinero still gets to win, you know, the golden boot. But I mean, obviously it's a very sour taste when you're not the actual ultimate winner at the end. Obviously, Eric, this is a huge thing for Major League Soccer to finally have this moment and say, look, it's not all about Mexico. And even then, you know, as I mentioned, two of the teams that are runners up here, Toronto, Montreal, they're Canadian. Mm-hmm. So as much as you want to say that it's Major League Soccer and they're still Major League Soccer teams, yes, it would have been just as important if they won for the league. But I think, you know, maybe it's not as special because it's not that same rivalry yet of Canada and Mexico. It's still part of that rivalry. It's the League's Cup as well. You know, that's getting restructured. You're going to play all the teams and everything. Like, to be able to say, oh, finally, that ability to say the U.S. has a representative.
And you had even mentioned, because when they decided to, you could say, all but scrap it, trim it down for the League's Cup showcase for this year and have next year the full League's Cup, what did they do? Two key stalwart American MLS franchises, including LAFC. So that's really the heart of it. While you have had a lot of great Canadian, the bread and butter is it's a U.S. league. And for the U.S. to be represented now on the world stage with a club team in Seattle, this is really going to be a boon for the league as a whole.
Right. And I mean, if you, I think we talked about this at one point, you look at, it's not just the way that It's not just okay, Seattle won.
Right.
Right. It's the way that they won. They really went through this entire competition. They scored goals. They did not just sneak out wins here and there. It's something to be said. Again, 4-2 on aggregate, 5-2 on aggregate. You go in as well, 4-1. I mean, it's look, you know, they go Motagua 5-0. I mean, yeah. Seattle really proved that name of the gold standard because they were a gold standard throughout this entire competition.
Yeah, they were never a team that really left any doubt. It's like, oh, but they can't score. Oh, but it's high-scoring aggregate. Or, oh, they're a way for them to defend. There was a reason why even for the final, they got to host the second leg. They were long-standing favorites, and they were the better team through the course of the tournament. And especially tonight, that's where they really proved it. They did what they had to do, and it's like, all right, we left it in our house for it all to play for where we know we can get the job done. There they were. And a casual on aggregate, it's 5-2, but it's so much more than that.
No, and I mean, just what it means to that city and the everything. I just, like, you could – I mean, they talk about the 12th man all the time in Seattle, but it really felt like you could – I'm just watching it on a phone – and you can feel that just intensity there, that nobody leaves. Everybody's there to watch them have that moment of lifting the trophy and getting the medals and everything.
Yes, yeah. I saw that ceremony. First thing I thought, my man, it's going to be a party in Seattle tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge party. And you can see the smile on Don Garber's face as well. During that, like how excited he was to be giving all these trophies away and knowing that, you know, Seattle finally had the moment. I mean, so obviously this gives strength to these Major League Soccer sides to say, you know what, I'm not going to win it anyway. Why am I going to go and put up my best team throughout? I think this perhaps, do you feel like that it gives more teams that qualify for the Major League Soccer side to say, you know what, this is worth it. We can win. We should give more attention to this. Do you think you'll see MLS sides give more attention to this instead of just the one big side?
Absolutely. And I think especially now next year when you have a full Leagues Cup on top of this, the Mexican mystique has finally been lifted. And a lot of your other clubs, you know, Atlanta, New England, NYCS, really those establishing themselves as top dogs, would be like, okay, if Seattle could do it, so can we. And we're on our best year in form. We'll manage in the league if we have to. But if we put our best 11, we can beat a best 11 of these other sides. Let's get after it.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, we can say, obviously, CONCACAF kind of makes it this way many times of, oh, it's always U.S. Mexico. It's always, well, I mean, those are the two club leagues. Mm-hmm. If you think about it and you look at South America and the way that many of those leagues have kind of deteriorated, except for Brazil, because of Major League Soccer pulling out much of the talent from the Colombian leagues, Argentinian leagues. So they haven't been able to reproduce those players. And then you bring that up to your teams, and obviously you're spreading it through to 30, what we expect to be 30 teams at some point with the Las Vegas school, you know, squad. And then, you know, you had the Mexican teams that, they already have that pipeline of Mexican talent that just comes in. They're still kind of figuring out what is the best decision for them of, do we export to Europe or do we try to keep those Mexican stars in Mexico? So it is that, like, two different kinds of mindsets clashing, right, between the Mexican league and the MLS. And you get to prove which is better when you get to that Leeds Cup, which makes it interesting.
Yeah, because if you're looking at it and what Liga MX is doing as a whole with re-scrapping promotion relegation, renaming the Ascenso, it's like, okay, how are we going to use this to benefit? And now they get a whole year to say, okay, how can we use our current structure to reclaim our throne, best clubs in the region? And that's really going to be an interesting race. So I, for one, am not only just excited to see what Seattle is going to do later on in the Club World Cup, I'm really itching now towards August and saying, okay, everyone's in the pot. How is what going to work?
Right. How are the teams going to structure this now, especially Major League Soccer? Like, are you going to give teams more money, more cap space to be able to reach into those pockets and get more players and have deeper squads? I mean, how are we going to be able to do this? Then not only that, but you have, you know, Open Cup, you have whoever makes it to the Champions League. That's a lot of different competitions now. Major League Soccer is going to have to change a little bit about the way they structure things. And does that change eventually more of that structure improving those rosters? So
right.
I think this is huge for Major League Soccer on so many fronts. And again, like, the more you see this, you can say the Leagues Cup is contrived and, oh, it's only including Mexican teams, but until someone proves that they are able to, very much like we saw with Canada and the World Cup qualifiers, right? Yes, Saprissa's had their moments in their previous Champions Cup and some other teams have, but for the large majority, it has been Mexican teams destroying this competition with the one or two, you know, LA Galaxy, DC United back in the day. And then, you know, the four teams that we mentioned from MLS that have gotten runners up in the past. This is something that I think changes a lot of what you look at as far as saying, oh, well, the Mexican teams are going to win. Maybe not so much. And again, it gives life to those Major League Soccer teams to say, we can compete. We can.
And the best thing that CONCACAF did, as much as I admonish the extra change to what will be the format in 2024, they say, hey, they're looking at this and see, remember, League's Cup winners and maybe runners-up and what have you still to be decided, they're going to be in CONCACAF Champions League 2. So that sets up for all kinds of different extra rivalries, rematches, and this and that. And you see.
Well, I mean, it should, right? As you see with other competitions, when you have the Europa League, Europa Conference, Copa Sudamericana, like all that, they all go into the major one, right? They should. Right. So why not?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is just going to make things even better. And I can already sense a lot of licking of chops after this one.
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, speaking of licking their chops right now, Liverpool are probably really anxious after what they saw yesterday at this point from who are going to be their competition in the Champions League final in Paris when that happens on May 28th. You know, Liverpool are going for that quadruple, and they have finally kind of staked their claim now. You know, they're in the final of the FA Cup. They already won the Carabao Cup. Now they know they're in the final of the Champions League. They got those games to go. They got to see if Manchester City, especially after what, you know, happened here, are going to falter a little bit, and perhaps they can still make it and compete. But should note that Villarreal went and made it a game after the end of that first half at home. But then, you know, class shown through, and credit again to Klopp for every time I watch this squad, it's like, how immense is Luis Diaz? Every time that dude comes on, he makes a difference, and he makes that team so much better. And that's with having, you know, and not only that, like, I think it's made Sadio Mane better as well, because Sadio Mane gets to go through the center and kind of just make that run through there. And Luis Diaz is there on the wings to help Salah. And they kind of woke up after that. Fabinho scores that goal, and then they start rolling and getting more. And Liverpool kind of cruises towards that final in Paris. So, any thoughts on that game?
I was a little bit surprised when I saw that 2-0 Villarreal halftime score. I knew they were at home, Liverpool still managing these competitions, but I thought, all right, when are Liverpool really going to step up and fight? And as you mentioned, with Diaz, Mane being the finisher, it's like, okay, Klopp is like, I've got my center. Now I know what my front three is capable of. And he just said, go out and go do your thing. And that's exactly what they did. I think after they got that first goal, as you mentioned, Villarreal and everything that Unai Emery and all had set up, it seemed like it crumbled right then and there. One became two, became three, and it was just a moment of what could they do? The avalanche was already coming down.
It couldn't have gone any better, honestly, for Villarreal. You get the goal early on that kind of sets the tone, makes Liverpool have to think about it a little bit. You know, again, incredibly, Villarreal, they did this the same thing against Bayern. Mm-hmm. Two shots on target, two goals, right? They concede possession, they concede all that to Liverpool. You go to halftime, you're again drawn on arrogant, but again, this is the difference between having the two-goal cushion instead of the one-goal cushion that, you know, their fellow Premier League compatriots deal with and backfired on them. Is Liverpool went and took care of business in the first leg. You know, they made the best of their chances. They had some that they missed, obviously, but they were in control. And they kind of let that slip a little bit at home. I don't think it was anything about, like, Bayern perhaps, you know, taking them lightly. I think it was more about, I don't know if they expect the Villarreal to really kind of take it to them as much as they did. And that changed things. And credit to Klopp for right at halftime. Okay, you know what? We're not even going to let this go any further. Luis Diaz coming on right now changed everything.
Absolutely. It's like they anticipated, okay, we get to sit back and dictate things. Trying to dictate things, so let's go ahead and take it right to them on our terms. And the rest was history from there. Oh, only if City could have done the same.
Yeah, so the all-English final not happening here as much as, you know, perhaps many people would have wanted. Real Madrid, once again, I mean, we talk about sometimes history just falls in your favor when you are a team of this caliber, a team that just has that, I guess, la magia, the magic of a competition like Real Madrid has 13 Champions Leagues, Eric, and now they're getting to go fight for the por la 14, for the 14th, right? And that's crazy to think. Once again, 80 minutes, they do absolutely nothing. Nothing. And then here we go. The last 2 minutes of the game, what happens? Oh, Rodrigo pops up, gets a goal. Benzema with a beautiful freaking cross to save that ball that's about to go out. I mean, just...
I'm sorry. Can we talk about the ageless wonder, Karim Benzema? What is
he? I mean, he's not that old. He's 34. I mean, like,
come on. We talk about in soccer terms. We know we're getting up there at 34, but I mean, still to perform like that in a Champions League semifinal, like he's done this entire competition. It's like, okay. What do we have to do? Because you get the ball on his foot in one moment, and it's total chaos if you're in defense.
No, I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous what he's done this season. like, talk about, everybody was wondering, okay, you know, obviously he was in the shadow of Ronaldo all those years, everything else. I mean, can he really be the guy at 34 that you expect him to be? Well, talk about just absolutely blowing that out of the water with just, it's not just him scoring goals. He's literally will do nothing for long stretches of games. And then he just comes up with that one moment, right? Where it's just like, there he is. That's why you have him, have you expect all this out of him. But it's absolutely insane, Eric. I mean, he's played 41 matches and 41 goals. I mean, what kind of a freaking record is that? Like, between La Liga and Champions League, 41 matches, 41 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's insane.
Because we always talk about, for your striker, your number nine, you expect him to be a one and two man, a goal every other match, a goal a match. And to come up in extra time after getting that foul, slotting that penalty like it's nothing, that wound up being the winner on aggregate, I can't explain it. I can't.
Not to mention the Panenka in the first leg. That was ridiculous too. But no, it's not just Benzema. I mean, he obviously, again, played a big part in the first goal. And then the second goal, what a bit of magic again to flick off one player and then he happened to hit Rodrigo still right in the head while he's jumping. And then, of course, Benzema again getting the goal off the penalty, which that's a penalty. There's no doubt about that. Diaz happens to go for the ball. I don't know why he's going for the ball there. Benzema's not going to do anything. He still has some moves to make at that moment, and he misses and hits Benzema. That's a goal. And with Benzema's record at the penalty spot, I mean, even though he's missed a few, you know that's going in. And even though they still had a lot of time left in extra time, it's just very much like what happened with Chelsea. It wasn't going to happen. It wasn't their moment, no. I think. And we talk about the goal scorers, but I think also you have to point out Thibaut Courtois was ridiculous on this game. I mean, the save that he makes with his foot to barely put it out there, and he changed the total trajectory of that that pass, and then the one he makes in, what, the 92nd minute or something that absolutely saves the game, tremendous there as well. We talk about teams of destiny. Real Madrid has been that throughout this entire knockout round. I mean, PSG, you're down and you go and make that ridiculous comeback. You go and Chelsea, you're up and then Chelsea takes it to you, puts you on the back foot. And once again, at that moment, they come out again and win. And then here, Man City. And I feel like this. I know they lost in the final and everything, and that hurts. But I think this hurts just as much because you're up 1-0 at the Bernabeu with a great goal by Mahrez, beating Courtois at his post there. And then, you're not there in those key moments.
I don't know if it's just the spotlight as the clock keeps ticking, the spotlight gets a little too bright, a little too big. And exclusively in the Champions League, because in the league and everywhere else they're fine, it seems like Manchester City just has this aura, almost like this curse. No matter what happens, you get so close to having your hand on the trophy or playing for the trophy, and then everything out of nowhere just falls apart. Because, I mean, even with Real and how they've been playing in the knockout stages, do you realistically expect them to score twice in the matter of a minute. Their odds at that point in the match, 45-1. 45-1.
I mean, considering what's happened with Yama, this whole competition, nothing is out of the realm of possibility. It's absolutely true.
We saw it today, but still, realistically, you'd think at some point you would have thought, all right, maybe Real's finally ran out of gas. Maybe the match.
Yeah, you would have thought that, but there, it's illogical what has been happening during this entire like knockout competition with them. And I think it helps a lot that you're also coming off the confidence of winning La Liga. You won La Liga handily, right? And also, like, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, you're talking about a manager that has won Champions Leagues already. This man he's the only manager to win what leagues in all the big countries.
And the European top five. He's got a trophy.
So imagine that. Like, that's incredible already. And then he's been using like the same 11 mostly for most of the season. And then even still, he seems to have that touch with the players of, okay, Camavinga comes on. He hasn't played a whole lot. The same with, you know, people were sitting there thinking, oh, well, what are you doing playing freaking Carvajal at this point? Oh, he just comes on. He plays well. Like Valverde, he's not the guy you would necessarily think about starting there in that line of three. Oh, he's just been doing great ever since you decide that you're going to put him there. So, you know, like Lucas Vazquez has been doing like nothing really for most of the season. And then also Jesus Vallejo. And then he comes on and they both do well there in extra time. So I think it's just something about like Carlo Ancelotti knows how to, he is an experienced manager and they just get things done. I think sometimes Pep is great. He's a fantastic manager. He's won, you know, everywhere he goes. There's not a whole lot to criticize him for, but it's like you have to think about why is Man City not like putting everybody behind the ball and just, okay, we know what you guys can do. It doesn't matter that we've outplayed you for 85 minutes. We just still got 5 minutes at the Bernabeu. Something could happen.
Like, exactly. And
I didn't understand that.
This has been really the one real, normally it would be a small criticism, but it occurs at such the biggest possible moments. He's been a kind of manager who tends to tactically kind of outthink the room, more so in very big matches. And you can go ahead, have all kinds of diagrams, move around all kinds of magnets. But at the end of the day, even though it won't look pretty, if it's a common sense thing to do, knowing the situation, that's exactly why you won before. Don't worry about, oh, I've got this talent or this team, this money, this, and this here. No, it's just, this is not what we need to do. This is normally a winning strategy. You'll be forgiven as long as you win the big trophies. I think he's forgotten that.
Well, it's not, I think it's that, okay, it's nice to be pretty. Right? Yeah. It's nice to play good football when you can do that. But sometimes you got to be ugly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to be dirty when you need to make sure that your team gets to that final again.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the case here. I mean, I think you can also blame the center backs here for not getting to those headers and everything else as well. At the end of the day, it's on the players, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Pep can't solve mistakes. Pep can't solve Diaz going for that, you know, tackle where he shouldn't have been. So at the end of the day, it's unfortunate for Manchester City, but in a way, I think as much as it would have been, I guess, cool and fitting to have another Manchester City Liverpool showdown, two for two in finals, right? And the one semifinal for the FA Cup. And maybe Liverpool has a big advantage because Real Madrid doesn't have a second leg to stand on. For this one, it's a one-legged deal. Man, I just can't count them out right now.
And neither can I. And I messaged, you know, Harry Broadhurst, fellow host on the network, avid Liverpool fan. I messaged him. Your road to that quadruple just got a lot harder. And yeah. I'm looking at this Real Madrid team, and it's like, you've got the FA Cup final coming up against Chelsea. You're meeting your second final because you beat them in the Carabao Cup. You know, you're a point behind City in the league with four to play. You know, they've got to draw points. Maybe they do that with this hangover, but he said it himself. It's stars versus stars on that pitch in Paris. And I'd be very unwise to go against Real Madrid right now. I really would.
Yeah. And you do have Benzema being French, getting to go to Paris. And imagine making the most of that there. So, no, and it's definitely one that it's going to be catching the eye. I mean, as much as you want to say you won an all-English final, that really does knock out a lot of people from watching it because as much as the Premier League is the most popular league in the world, there's a lot of folks from fans of, say, Real Madrid, Barcelona, other, you know, PSG, other countries that, Manchester City, Liverpool, why do I want to watch this final? You know, even though it could be great, right? We've seen nothing between these two teams is dull. Nothing between Manchester City, Liverpool is ever dull. You know, when you have Klopp and Pep going against each other, you know, in the mind, and the players going out there and performing on the field. But this is a different dynamic, I think, of getting to see Ancelotti and the Real Madrid, this you know, I've said a team of destiny against Liverpool that is coming in quadruple, could have the quadruple in hand, right? They could possibly have it all wrapped up, and all they need is this one game.
Yep.
To have that, and then what happens? You know, does Real Madrid do their thing where they play that bad game for 80 minutes and then they do one of these, or does Liverpool actually just punch them in the mouth and keep going? And that's the thing that I think is different here. And Ancelotti's really going to have to – I don't think Real Madrid could play that game against Liverpool, because Liverpool does not stop going.
No.
You know, and they have the defenders to go against them. And I think Klopp's a little bit having the privilege of being able to have seen what happened to all these teams. I think he won't commit that same mistake. I think he would, if he needs to put everybody behind the ball to make sure he gets that victory, I think you'd see him do that.
Absolutely. Klopp has never been a manager that has worried about, you know, kind of ugly grinding out those results. And if he's up 1-0, 2-1, 80th, 85th minute, it's like, okay, we'll wait. We'll go ahead and wait for the counters. We'll go ahead and be a little bit slower, bit more tiki-taka. Maybe time waste a little bit more. It's like, keep everything moving at that right pace, forcing Ancelotti to try to have some sort of move in the players on that pitch to answer and have that quick strike. So it's going to be a unique, different type of chess match come the 28th.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, again, Liverpool are going to be favorites, going to be expected to win, whether they have that quadruple in hand or not, considering the way Real Madrid has played in this tournament, where they get outplayed by the team, but they still come out victorious. Again, they don't have that second leg to go back to the Bernabeu and get one. It's a different perspective. So it's going to be an interesting lead up to the 28th and what is all there for Liverpool when we get to it. Obviously, the first thing for them is in about a week or so, that FA Cup final against the Chelsea team that still don't know who their owners are. And we will see. Right now, it is the Los Angeles Dodgers ownership and also the Swiss billionaire that are have the quote-unquote exclusive limited time frame right now, but still a chance for somebody else.
If Magic Johnson and that consortium buy another team and has continued greatness, I'm not going to know what to do with myself.
But it would yet again be another sort of American-led team, ownership team in the Premier League. And considering what we've already been seeing with the one that for the team that we support with a lot of protests against the Glazers, it's kind of, you know, it goes well for Liverpool with the Fenway group. And then we can see the other side of it also with Manchester United. So interesting how all of that is going to be shaking out. Supposedly they have until the end of May when that trading license expires. And then I think they have to have it figured out by the 8th, because that's when the I think the money is supposed to go back into the teams from the TV rights and all of that. And if they don't have it done by then, they can actually force Chelsea to not play next season, or even get to the worst part of selling the team. I don't think we're going to get to that. Who knows what that means for Christian Pulisic? If you have an American owner, does that mean that you try to push for Pulisic to stay there? Or, you know, rumors already of perhaps Weston McKennie and Christian Pulisic getting to become a dynamic duo over there at Juventus. So, of course, that's a long ways away yet. You know, the silly season is coming, and I'm sure there will be tons of rumors going around of who's going to go where and all that stuff. But before we get to everything else we got to do, we got a few little tidbits of news to talk about. Unfortunately, I feel sorry for our dear friend Rachel that is part Russian, half Russian, if I'm not mistaken. And she is having to see, and unfortunately, yeah, right?
It's this terrible is a for the players. Yeah.
The players and also the country that has nothing to do with what one man has decided to do, right? But it's all about putting that political pressure, that political pressure on Putin and on Russia to maybe this will make them make a decision. But the women's Euros that is happening, you know, in the summer of this year will not see Russia attempt to compete, as they will not be able to play their qualifier games. They have been taken out of the competition. Portugal, actually, who they already defeated, will take their place in their spot and get to go and compete in those Euro qualifiers to see if they can make it to the women's Euros 2022 there. And also, Russia is going to get relegated from the Nations League, you know, the Group B or?
Yeah, League B. Yeah.
They can't compete in any of the Russian clubs cannot compete in the Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference. They can't even compete in the youth competition. That's how far this goes.
I mean,
so it's not just the men, not just the senior men. Mm-mm. It's the youth competitions and the women as well. I mean, talk about just hurting everyone in one blow.
Yeah, and you figure the longer that this was going to go, the more organizations like UEFA in particular and FIFA were really going to act, because number one, it would have been a terrible look for either of them if they had been able to. And number two, like you said, put that pressure. It's like, hey, you're not going to benefit from any of this revenue or this platform of a world stage to do what you're doing.
Yep. No bid for the Euros in 2028 and 2032 as well. And even though that's far away, I think that's, to me, that's even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that goes direct to the federation, direct to the country. You're hurting them where it really matters. Like, this brings in so much to Russia, and you're gonna tell them No, no, no. You don't even get a chance at that.
Nope.
Bid. So you get demoted to the third level of the Nations League. You can't bid for the Euros. The women can't compete in the Euro 2022 that's happening. The men are, you know, banned from the World Cup as well. I mean, just...
This is a loss of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Putting it out brass tacks and all of those, and it's going to compound.
Chelsea's having to be sold because of this from Roman Abramovich.
And not to mention, Abramovich can't, even though he said all the profits are going to go to Ukraine and what have you, even if he didn't, he wouldn't have been able to profit anything from the sale anyway. So that automatically $2 billion just to him. So money talks. And I feel that they're keeping with the trend as they should. At some point, you got to stop and think, how far am I really willing to go with this? UEFA is telling you. FIFA is going to tell you. Now it's up to you.
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, I hate it for those, again, the people of Russia that have nothing to do with this decision, that have to see their sports teams be hurt. I mean, this could also affect Ukraine. We still don't know. The longer this goes, could they actually field a team to play against Scotland? Could they have to forfeit that game and not even compete at the World Cup because of what is going on? I mean, they still have about a month or so to figure it out, but I can't see FIFA delaying this any further.
They would have run out of windows, in essence.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the one window you can do it in. I mean, I guess they could somehow do it in the September window, but that's really putting, you know, Wales at a disadvantage as well. So that is waiting in the wings there for whoever, for either one of them. So that's something too. I mean, and it's also not fair to the other teams in their group, you could say, because they have less time to prepare and everything else. So, I mean, but this is obviously extreme circumstances, but I just can't see it happening. It's either they're going to play it or they're not. And I'd hate to see that we don't even get to that point because of this terrible situation that is going on in Ukraine right now. And it sucks to see. Wow.
It really does.
So in, I guess you could say, happier news or lighter news, there is going to be a first ever soccer football match at Lambeau Field at the frozen tundra, even though it may not be very frozen. It'll be very, very grassy.
It'll be the not quite, or more, we'll call it the temperate tundra, as it'll be about 65 degrees. Nice and temperate, you know?
Yeah, you go from having Vince Lombardi and Bart Starr and Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers to a different kind of stars. Bayern Munich and Manchester City playing an exhibition match, you know, as they prepare for the next season. They're in the preseason, July 23rd. They're going to play at Lambeau Field. I mean, 65-year history of this incredible stadium that is legendary when it comes to the American football, now hosting the European football. Do you think this will be such a huge success that we're going to see more soccer games at the historic Lambeau Field then?
I do. But there's a specific reason why. I think they picked the perfect teams. And especially since this is part of Bayern's Audi Tour, the fact that they go to Wisconsin, which you have a lot of like proud, you know, German pockets in their population, I think that was an absolute brilliant choice. You're going to have your people coming in from Milwaukee, making the trip to Green Bay. Going to have a lot of Bayern fans in that stadium. And I think if you really do have it, like I'm hyping it up, I think that'll open the door for a few more teams to be like, hey, maybe we should go ahead and try and playing here as well.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, Eric? Maybe it does so well that they have to put in for consideration to the, to be one of the stadiums, right, for the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, we look at 94, you had it at the Silver Dome in Detroit.
I mean, but that's a huge stadium.
No, I know that's huge, but what I'm saying as far as in context, there's some sort of precedent in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It's nice in the summer, so it's something that could, you know, not a lot that you would have to do to really make massive changes, nothing permanent. So it couldn't hurt. It couldn't hurt.
Yeah. It's going to be cool, a cool moment and a cool thing to talk about when it finally does happen. And again, like getting it sort of close to the season where maybe you will see some of those big stars play for both teams. That's a pretty sweet moment to happen. And unlike Yankee Stadium or whatever, which looks terrible for a soccer team, this one, I think will look pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sorry, I should note, since I want to make sure I make this correction before we get off the air. Portugal is officially in the tournament. They're not having to qualify. Russia beat them in the playoff, and they are officially the 16th team now. Okay. That's part of Euro 2022. Russia would have been in the tournament itself, but they are not able to because of this. So because they beat Portugal in the playoff, Portugal automatically, it basically as if Portugal had beat Russia instead.
Right, which is usually when you have that like final playoff for a group stage spot, it's a logical choice.
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, we'll have to see. Can the Netherlands repeat again? Mm-hmm. Or will Denmark or Germany, that has won this thing so many times, or you know, Norway or even England, who are hosting this tournament, be able to make a big run, you know, and perhaps England finally gets that moment in the Women's World Cup. So be ready. I mean, they're going to have a huge spotlight because there's not going to be a whole lot of soccer going on that's meaningful, right? I mean, because the World Cup is not in the summer, the women's tournaments are really going to be what kind of fleshes out the summer for everybody.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be some great soccer as well. The women get their time to shine.
Yeah, you know, we can say what we want about the Biennial World Cup, and everybody was saying, you know, oh, it's not great for the men's leagues. Well, it's not great necessarily for the women's leagues. And right now they do get the benefit of, you get that big summer time. So the cool thing is, I mean, it's going to be going on at the same time as the CONCACAF W. So we're going to have to be kind of pulling a little bit of double duty here and there. But at least I think CONCACAF W ends right as their group stage is ending. So at least for the knockout part of the tournament, it'll be the only thing on.
Thank goodness also for time zones.
That too. Thankfully for time zones as well. So that being said, we will be back again on Saturday to talk about the next Know Your Teams, which again, as I said, is Ghana. I don't know yet if we're going to do a show on Sunday or if we're just going to do a double show on Wednesday. We will be doing that first CONCACAF W, which we're going to like flip between doing a team in Group A and then a team in Group B as we go all the way to get to that time in July. So the first team will be Haiti, and then we'll be making our way until we get to the United States at the end. And then, of course, we'll do a big preview of, you know, our thoughts on who we think will win and everything else. So until then, everyone, make sure you, if you like what you watched, whether you watched on YouTube or you watched live on the Twitch or on Twitter or Facebook, you go follow us there, subscribe, like, however it is that you want to do that. You can go, if you don't like watching us, which I can understand, you know, maybe watching two people constantly is not the easiest thing. You can also listen to us on in your car, in on your bus ride to work, on however it is that you prefer to listen to your podcast. We are on anything that there is podcasts: Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, you name it, Overcast. We're there. So you can subscribe there and you'll get anytime we do a show, just subscribe to the Soccer to the Max feed and you get it that way. That being said, we are now part of American Whammy Media. So pretty soon you'll see us rebrand from the WTM Network to American Whammy Media. And that'll be a cool moment, hopefully happening within the next couple shows. We'll officially be able to unveil that. But for now, subscribe to that Soccer to the Max feed and you get everything we do here. And shout out to everybody else that does wonderful shows on the network, of course. Eric and the Life is Like a Game show, and the Broadhurst and Watkins Sports Report, and Point of Viewer. So if you love seeing Eric's face, you see him plenty here on the network. So until next time, see you later, everybody.
Peace.
Bye.